Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Media in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet and Sean Dugan of the Alaska Dispatch. It's an off year, 2013 being an off year. No election, but Alaska politics are heating up anyway, along with the weather. This week, Paul, Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell filed for the U.S. Senate.
He sure did. He, like a lot of others, are getting in early. This is going to be a huge election. Tons of money and a lot of interest. He's in. He says he's going to fight Obama on his assault on families and freedom. He's going to fight for fiscal sanity, and he's fighting for Alaska.
Okay.
That's what he plans to do.
And how do you tailor that into a message for the campaign, Sean?
Well, I think that's pretty much the standard campaign message, at least for the GOP candidates running for office in this state. As you know, we're a libertarian kind of state. We don't like federal intrusion, but I don't think it's any more specific about the issues than anybody else's being, frankly.
And obviously, it's very early, so we're going to have a lot of development here. And an opening statement is not a campaign. That's something else we got to remember.
Absolutely.
Hey, Paul, what about Joe Miller, Treadwell's rival, who's going to also run for the U.S. Senate, and he ran before?
Yeah, he got in earlier. Joe Miller, who has a Bronze Star, by the way, he's in it. Mead Treadwell told The Hill when he announced, or shortly
The Hill after, publication.
The Hill publication, that he thinks that Miller scares people. And Miller says, no, he's not that kind of guy at all. So it's going to be a slugfest. But the only poll that I know of has Treadwell out a little bit in front right now. If there were a contest between the two, and I think it shows Miller probably would lose in a face-off with Begich.
Okay, Paul, let's stick with you. Here's a story that was on the front page of the news today that is unusual. Signature gatherers, people who are out gathering signatures for the referendum opposing Governor Parnell's oil tax changes, have met with competitors, or some maybe they're hecklers even, or at least people who say they're giving real information about what's going on. In other words, they're paid advocates for the other side who are telling potential voters who might sign this petition, don't sign it until you get all the information. This at least is new around here.
It's done elsewhere. It's fairly popular. It's very effective elsewhere, too. Art Hackney, political consultant, has hired probably six people, and he's got volunteers to go out, and what he says is to counter misinformation by those who want to repeal the last legislative session's fix of oil taxes in the state. They've got until July 13th to come up with 30,000 signatures. And what Hackney's people do is they shadow the petitioners, and they try to get people to stop and talk to them before they sign the petition. And they also offer up a website, or a couple of websites, I guess, where a signer, a signature giver, can go and have a signature removed from the petition. And I think one of them is "I made a mistake," which is kind of interesting. But these people can go there and have their signatures removed. It could be a very effective.
If you were to do a cost-benefit analysis of this, I mean, how many people a day would a person getting paid $15 an hour, which seems to be the going rate,
right,
have to get? 10, 15 people a day? But do we even know?
Well, we don't know. There's no way to know. If somebody doesn't do something, it's like proving a negative. You can't do it. But on the other hand, how many people walk up and see this cluster of people? First off, they're going to try to avoid that, like you avoid a picket line. And then they try to say, well, there's a guy with a sign. I got to deal with that. Don't sign this. The misinformation, blah, blah, blah. And then maybe they don't sign at all. You don't know they didn't sign. They just go by and mind their own business.
Sean, it seems to me the real message here is whatever the effectiveness of this technique is, this sends us a message about what kind of campaign this is going to be.
Absolutely. This is going to be a vicious campaign. I think we've already seen that. There's radio ads out. I believe some television ads are starting. Both sides are going to spend a lot of money over oil taxes, and there's a lot at stake for both sides, because as a citizens initiative, by law, if it passes, it can't be undone by the legislature for 2 years. So supporters of the current oil tax would say that you know, that's time that would set the state back, of course, and it would also give proponents of the oil of changing the oil taxes again time to prove their case those 2 years under the old system.
Yeah, this is a statewide election with a lot at stake.
Yes, it is.
Sean, let's stick with you. Mayor Dan Sullivan of Anchorage announces he's running for lieutenant governor. What is Sullivan saying? Why did he file?
Well, Sullivan says that he has a deep interest in serving the state of Alaska, and he wants to bring his talents of fiscal conservatism to the state government. He points to the work he did on the Anchorage budget, which includes a controversial measure that they passed to change the way the city negotiates with unions. But
right.
Sullivan's basically putting his fiscal credentials out there, saying that he's going to be able to help the state with its budget. Is it a letdown to be lieutenant governor after mayor of the largest city? Some would say it is. Certainly it's not as high profile a job. There's less to do. I believe the lieutenant governor is by law required to do just a few things, among them notary public, run the elections, and then of course guard the state seal. And then of course anything that the governor assigns to the lieutenant governor. But what it does do is give you statewide exposure. So if you're a candidate, even Sullivan, as well known as he is in Anchorage, Alaska's a big place. So it makes you wonder, is this the first step for him to something larger down the road?
And we should note that when you run for lieutenant governor in a Republican primary, it's a closed primary.
Yep.
It's only Republican voters and independents. And at the same time, when you run as lieutenant governor in a general election, the election's really about who's going to be the governor.
Absolutely, and we're one of those unusual states where we separate those, and there's been a history of governors who get saddled with a lieutenant governor they're not too fond of.
So. Yeah, we've certainly seen that. Okay, Paul, what about, there is competition in this race, State Senator Liesl McGuire of Anchorage.
First, let me say I wouldn't mind having this job. Now,
you think you'd make be a great guard for the state seal? Is
that what you're telling us? I can goof off as good as anybody you know. I'm here to tell you that.
Maybe better.
It may be better. Probably better. Liesl McGuire, she's the Senate Rules Chairman last time out. She says that Sullivan is too divisive, that she would be a peacemaker, if you will, and be able to get out there and work and not make people be upset. I guess I'm not going to upset anybody. I guess that's her campaign thing. But she's in. I doubt that she's the last, or that Sullivan's the last. I believe there'll be other people in as well.
Well, and there is a Democrat. Bob Williams, a teacher from the Valley, has also filed. So there will be a Democratic challenger on that as well.
And we still haven't had any Democrat file for governor.
Yeah.
Okay, Paul, I was going to ask you, it would seem to me that Liesl McGuire clearly has some as an attractive candidate in this race, but at the same time, you have to wonder, it seemed like Sullivan would start with the advantage of being better known outside of Anchorage.
He's better known outside
even
of
though
Anchorage.
He's the mayor of the largest city, and he comes from a political family.
That's right. She's traveled a lot out in rural Alaska, I think. She's got connections all over the state. The family's been here a very long time, like Sullivan.
Yeah.
Sullivan's going to be carrying baggage into this race. They both are. They both have, you know, unfortunately for them, they have political careers, and there's things that people are going to pick and choose. I think what you pointed out earlier is that it's really going to be about the governor. This race is going to be quickly pushed to the back when the governor's race gets underway. So
right.
It's going to be a matter of who's got the best message, who's got the best governor's candidate. That's what's going to come down to.
Okay. Senator Lisa Murkowski now says she is fully evolved. She now backs gay marriage. Sean, her explanation, and it's an uncommon one coming from Republicans in major national positions.
It is, and I believe she's only the third U.S. senator, a Republican U.S. senator, to say that she backs gay marriage. You know, this is something that by watching Senator Murkowski, many people saw coming. She's been hinting over the last year and a half, at least, that her position on this might change. I think she was one of the first Republicans to come out in defense of removing the don't ask, don't tell language
right.
For the military. So this isn't unprecedented. Is she going to be a leader on the issue, charging forward to get rid of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act? I don't know how much she's going to do, at least in leadership. But it is interesting, and it does put her in a small minority among the Senate.
It does show, once again, her independence within the Senate group. wouldn't you say?
Absolutely, and I think that now is a perfect time for her to do that because she, you know, some would say she could become emboldened by her recent victory over Joe Miller as an independent, and so that kind of frees her then of the bridle of maybe some of the tenets of the Republican Party.
Paul, is there any political downside for Senator Murkowski?
Well, this, you know, doing it when she's done it, she's got three more years before her next election. Hopefully she can put this behind her. I think if she'd have waited up until the very last minute to do this, I think it would have hurt her a lot. Already, there are many Republicans are upset with her, and we've got the Catholics are upset with her. Yeah, there is a political downside on the far right of the party. I don't know if that'll hold up for 3 years or not. I have a feeling that she has her own base, I think what we saw in the last race, and I think that a lot of those people don't care one way or the other about
marriage. We know that Alaska has a libertarian streak, right?
Libertarian streak. Everybody to do their own thing. That's correct.
Okay. A marijuana initiative is about to start having people going out and gathering signatures. The proponents will be gathering signatures today, as I've heard. What's this initiative do, this legalization of marijuana initiative, Paul?
Dude, I don't know. I'm sorry, couldn't resist. It's going to tax regulate the sale and use of marijuana. If you want dope, you can have 1 ounce. It decriminalizes. You can have an ounce of dope or six plants, three of which may be mature. They've got until July also, or they have a year to come up with 30,000 signatures to get this on the ballot as well. I'm not sure where they are right now. It's just started. I think you said the booklets are going
out. Yeah, that's what my understanding was. Yeah. Sean, has Alaska evolved, to use that word again, far enough to pass a marijuana initiative? After all, we have defeated marijuana proposals in the past.
Yeah, in 2004, an initiative failed, I think, 44% to 56%. And in 1990, we went so far as to actually pass a law criminalizing marijuana after a Supreme Court ruling, which then, again, was revisited after that, which had the effect of decriminalizing certain amounts of marijuana possession in Alaska. We're a transient state. And the more time goes by, the more our demographics are changing. The proponents of legalizing or decriminalizing marijuana look at Alaska in that last election in 2004, and they say, look, there was only a 10-point spread there, 9-point, 11-point spread. So we've got a chance there, and you're starting to see other states now legalize marijuana, Colorado, Washington, I think Oregon.
When I've read their statements, the advocate statements, that's one of the things they seem to really be banking on is that this is a national wave, and Alaska is going to be part of the national wave.
Yeah, and at least that's what they that's why they believe that now's the time to strike, at least on this issue.
And Paul, I assume that there'll be opponents for this, and there'll be the typical ones that we had in the past: police officers, government officials, church leaders, and some physicians.
I think you can pretty much bank on that. Yeah, there's going to be opposition to it, and I don't think it's going to be as easy for them as they think it's going to be. There are a lot of, this is a state that doesn't allow gambling. I mean, we have a streak of Puritanism in us, as well as everything else we have going. But
I can't resist, if we don't allow it, how come so much of it's going on?
Well, I'm sure you're wrong. I'm sure nobody is smoking dope.
Or gambling. Sean, this is not a story that gets a lot of attention, and it doesn't get readers and viewers excited, but it's an important story. Anchorage Water and Wastewater Utility may have to upgrade or replace its main treatment plant to comply with the Clean Water Act. This could cost hundreds of millions. Mm-hmm. Explain.
Well, first of all, let me say, nobody I've talked to on either side of this issue believes the EPA will actually require them to do it, at least now. But the Anchorage Water and Wastewater Utility Treatment has three plants, one of which is at Point Warrensoft, the largest, handles about 28 million gallons a day. There's two smaller plants, one in Girdwood and Eagle River, that are better in that they process water better. But it has to get a waiver or a modification from the Clean Water Act because it only uses what they call primary treatment. There's a certain, it gets pretty wonky, but there's a certain number of the dissolved solids they have to remove and the oxygen depleting organisms. And they basically treat that and then pump it out into Cook Inlet. Other cities are required to have secondary or even tertiary treatment plants, meaning they do much more to the water they add. They aerate it, they add some biological processes. So, you know, dilution is the solution in Cook Inlet, with the fourth, fifth largest tidal changes in the world and the highest in the U.S. it seems that pumping water that's not as treated as maybe some other cities wouldn't be a good idea. But that's the thing. All the evidence that they do have, which is very little, but all the testing that they've done shows that it's not affecting any of the fish or the whales or the food that the whale eats. So then you look at it, 800 million, probably more. Is that worth it? So, of course, complicating all this is since the last time the EPA renewed the permit, beluga whales have been now listed as threatened, so that's kind of even slowed the EPA down even further. The permit expired in 2005. We've been under administrative extensions ever since. Now the EPA says it's going to go to public comment this fall and have a decision by next year, but you know, they said the same thing last year. So,
is there a, for those who are uninitiated, is there sort of a halfway point in this where you wouldn't have to start all over again and spend $800 million? Are there other things they could do, or does this all depend on what their findings are in the process?
Well, it depends on what the findings are, but to upgrade to secondary or tertiary, which is the requirement under the Clean Water Act that we get a modification from, AWWU estimates that it's going to cost between $600 and $800 million just to upgrade the plant they already have. They have some land next door that they want to use. If that happens, of course, the airport also wants that land. So it would not be an easy thing for
and
the city.
How long have we been living with this current policy that we have now, or current approach, or both?
The entire life of the Asplund plant. It was built in 1972 or 74, I believe. The Clean Water Act was applied to places in 85. So we've been getting modifications since 1985. But, you know, in fairness to the plant, it the water coming out of it is twice as clean as the minimum requirement under that waiver. So it's not simply they just skim off the top and pump it out there. It's more complicated than that, but it's certainly not as good a process as you find in a lot of cities.
And also, if you want to read more details about some of this icky process, you can read about it in the Alaska Dispatch. Sean has an excellent story. Paul, every summer we have stories about Alaskans and their visitors behaving badly or bizarrely. In the last few days, we've had a drunken tour bus driver, a picnicker arrested for feeding a bear, a drunken driver on a motorized shopping cart in Fairbanks. We hear a lot about the virtues of common sense, but there are times when it seems to be lacking, or do newspapers just overplay this because in the summer, well, it's kind of slow?
I'm generally amazed every summer what goes on up here. The guy who was feeding the bear barbecue, drunk at a church picnic.
Yeah,
I mean, come on. He's at a church picnic, he's feeding the bear, and the bear mauls him. I mean,
well, the bear scratched him and beat him up a little bit. I don't think he mauled him.
We call that mauled, sure. It's close enough. They got roughed up, got his hair mussed up a little bit. The motorized shopping cart in Fairbanks, well, that's Fairbanks. I mean, you're not
going to get told. Oh, no. You know, that one.
We're lucky that's all that was. You know what I'm saying? So, no,
yeah, because we had somebody get shot in Anchorage with a motorized cart.
Small thing.
Sean, you wanted to say?
I was just saying that the shopping cart one actually made the national headlines.
Yeah.
It was so unusual. So, unfortunately, as with most states, a lot of people drink in Alaska. And
I was about to say the newspaper coverage and television coverage routinely has the phrase, police believe alcohol may have been involved.
Yeah, alcohol is often the precursor to some very bad decisions, and some of those unfortunately end up being criminal. So how do you get people to act responsibly? If I knew that, I guess I'd be a much better father.
But but there's also the story of not just alcohol, but water and a moose.
Yeah.
Tell us that story.
So in Delta Junction, actually, on Fort Greeley, a young moose about a week old was seen by itself. And, of course, people gathered around the moose and believed it to be abandoned. They called Fish and Game. Fish and Game in Fort Greeley went out there and said, look, the mother could go away for some period for feeding. If you're here, you're going to keep it from coming back. So please leave the area. Next morning, they found the moose dead. A necropsy determined that the moose was dehydrated, but it actually drowned, which is important because there was no sources of water anywhere near the moose. They found some bruising in the animal's larynx, which indicates to them that somebody tried to force feed it water, obviously thinking they were doing the wrong thing, and the moose actually died of drowning. So if they find the person, they could be fined up to $10,000, a year in jail, and then they might have to even pay the state restitution for the value of the moose. We value our wildlife. There's a number on all the wildlife.
You were explaining this. There's not only a value on wildlife, it's very specific for the individual species type of animal. Explain to us.
It is. A moose is $1,000, whether it's a young moose or an old moose. It's worth $1,000 to the state. So if you take an animal out of season or kill an animal, then you technically owe the state $1,000. Brown bear, for instance, $1,200 or $1,300. The most expensive animal is a muskox, actually, at $3,000. So.
And it's not a polar bear? You need to explain that to our
viewers. Polar bears, whales, all marine species are taken care of by the Fed, so we don't put a price tag on those. But I think that that would just be a minimal cost compared to all the other court fees you would have in dealing with that.
Okay, Paul, Senator Pete Kelly of Fairbanks wants to keep the names of those who sign initiatives and referendum petitions private. Right now, those signatures are public information. What's on his mind?
Well, currently also, not only are they public information, they're sold by the state. And what he wants to do is, minus Social Security and addresses and that kind of thing, he wants to make sure that those are not sold, that that's private information, because people will use them for, in his word, nefarious purposes. So I'm not sure what that is. Nefarious, I'm sure, has limits, but I don't know what it would be. The people, for instance, people look at this and wonder what it's really about. The folks who are trying to get the oil tax rolled back, repealed, look at this as a black helicopter kind of thing, the exact word they used, to dissuade people from signing petitions, because people will be afraid their signatures and whatnot would be let out. And this is letting people know that, by golly, if you do sign that, your name is available to the public. Now, he's going to introduce this next legislative session. What he's really up to, I don't know. It seems to me odd that they would sell those lists, but
well, I guess you could sell the list, but one of the things you can do is verify the list very quickly. And I don't know if those people do that before they turn them in or turn them in at the same time. So that's an interesting question itself,
want to find out if it's legit, that's right.
And there are some people who will say, I'm going to put my name on there, and I don't care if the whole world knows it, and I'm going to do a John Hancock thing.
Well, I think most Alaskans are probably that way. They probably wouldn't care what you thought. They'll sign it if they want to.
Okay, John, let's get you in here. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think most people would think, though, that by signing a petition that all of a sudden they could get some targeted marketing phone calls at their
house. I guess one of the things that would make people very unhappy, right?
Yeah, especially in Alaska, where we love our privacy.
But are we seeing a trend at the state level, and even perhaps more so at the federal level, of making information that should be of value to the public and should be public, putting it away where nobody can get it?
Absolutely, especially over the last 5 years, at least in my experience as a reporter, things have gotten, it used to take maybe a phone call to the right person and you could get the information, and now you have to go through, especially with the state, a public information records request to the troopers or any other state office, and then you got to wait for them to get back to you, and it's just not as simple to get information that is in the public record even. You got to submit a form and wait, so it seems that to be a growing trend at all levels of government, not just Fed, state, and local.
Paul, has this been your experience as well?
Especially, it started under the Palin administration, and since that time, it's just been one rocky road after another. You can't just simply get information anymore. You have to make a huge case to get it, and that's what government
and
does.
And with the Palin administration, was that in response to her difficulties with the media or something else?
I think it was a combination of her distrust for the media and basically giant news organizations come to you and say, I need this and this and this and this. These requests were pretty massive, some of them. A general request causes more trouble than a specific request. So when they would come in, that's why they gave them a $15 million bill, I think it was.
Oh, and this was the business about trying to determine whose emails she was using, private or government, or phone she was using, the government.
I'm not speaking out of school. I mean, I recently made a request to the governor's office. And I just made a general request. Well, it came back, there's 80 people in this office. Can you narrow it down? It'll take forever to find this sort of thing. And there's huge amounts of money. And it's just like they're not there to help you. And if they're not helping us, they're not helping the public. And I guess if anything irritates me more than anything, they're violating the spirit of the public records law.
Today there was a story, McClatchy had a story that some of the people in the Obama administration and the various security agencies were trying to tell their employees that leaking information to the media would be treated as the equivalent of treason.
Exactly.
Wizard.
Yeah.
Wizard is before the Animal Control Board at the Matsu Valley Animal Shelter. Mm. Wizard was also on the front page today. Yeah. I didn't expect that. So tell us about Wizard and Wizard's fate.
Well, this is just one of those classic lose-lose-lose kind of stories. Wizard is a one-year-old, technically a puppy, about 60 pounds out of Jake Berkowitz's kennel. He's an Iditarod musher, Yukon Quest musher from Big Lake area. Came in eighth last year in the Iditarod. Actually got an award for dog care. His neighbors, I believe they're his neighbors, a family that boards dogs with Berkowitz, were in the dog lot while the Berkowitzes were not home. The Berkowitzes knew at least that the mother was going to be there.
And the child was mauled.
The child was mauled actually quite horrifically by the dog who broke his tether, broke the S-hook that holds him to his house. You know, each dog has a little circle of area. And he bit the child in the neck, and I'm told ripped out several arteries and crushed her vocal cords, also almost bit her ear off.
So now they're having a big hearing on what to do with the dog, and perhaps lawsuits await.
Yep. And
I've got to cut you short as much as I don't want to. Thank you for joining us. We'll see you next week right here.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskapublic.org. Or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.